Hi, this is Scott. I really appreciate our sponsors because they make the show possible. Today's show is sponsored by Developer Express. Become a UI superhero with DevExpress, controls, and libraries. Deliver elegant .NET solutions that address customer needs today by leveraging your existing knowledge. You can build next-generation touch-enabled solutions for tomorrow. You can download your free 30-day trial at dx.hanselminutes.com. That's dx.hanselminutes.com.
From hanselminutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 522. In this episode, Scott talks with web developer and entrepreneur Karanda Adair about how projects fail and what to do with that failure.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. Today, we're talking with Karanda Adair from Carvel Digital, where she's the CEO and been doing web development for many, many years. And you've got a great topic for today.
Yes.
What is that
topic? We're going to talk about failure and recovering from failure.
I think that's a very courageous topic, because when we talked about this earlier and you told me about like the last year and that you had done a talk on failure, it really resonated with me because I have talks about imposter syndrome, and I did a talk on open source recently where I talked about let's all talk about the things that no one talks about. Like, we don't have to all suffer quietly and pretend that these things don't actually happen.
Right. And that's super important. And actually, one of my friends, who's also my lawyer, was asking on Twitter, you know, why don't we talk about like how hard it is to be an entrepreneur and all the things that suck about it. And, you know, I think there's a lot of reasons why people don't talk publicly about that. But the reality is those things do happen. And if you just talk about like when everything's great or when you've overcome, you know, the bad thing, then people think it's magic. And they're unprepared.
Yeah, they think that you have a startup or you get funding, and then a year later, you know, you're famous. And wow, that was great. We can all do that. But, you know, for every one that succeeds, there's some number, we don't know what that number is, that just don't.
Right. So what happened to me in the last year was I have had my business. I'm going into my fourth year. Mm-hmm. And last year was supposed to be, you know, the year of my business. I told my wife this, and I signed up for, you know, an accelerator program, kind of a business mastermind thing, and was really just going to focus on the business, because the first 2 years were filled with either health challenges or, you know, life mm-hmm. transitions. So joined the accelerator, went really well, got a really, really big job. A much larger project than I had done before, with a great company that I really felt good about. And then that project did not go very well. And I ultimately wasn't able to finish the last little bit of it, and had to say, you know what, this is really outside of my expertise, and I'm at the end of my resources, mm-hmm. and here's someone who can, you know, who can fix this and get you that last 5% of the way. But, you know, having spent most of my year on this thing, that was a really hard place to end up. And it was a very, very, very expensive lesson.
Yikes. Was this just one of those life happens things? Like, we were going to have a talk earlier today, but I got a flat tire. Is it like life happens, or was it a combination of life happens and actual mistakes?
It was mostly just, I think, lack of structure. Like for me, you know, you have to have a certain amount of structure and process in your business, I think, to handle projects over a certain size. Mm-hmm. And I didn't yet have that. Like I had the knowledge of like, these are the things that I want to put in place, but not the time to actually do it. Mm-hmm. And then this job came along. So I think part of it was that, part of it was, you know, just lack of experience. And so I, for the first time, was doing something where I knew I was going to have to hire other developers to help do it and, you know, work with designers and do all this stuff. And I'm a project manager by background, so I wasn't worried about that part of it. But, you know, I didn't have a lot of experience hiring, so I hired the wrong developer to start with. And then, you know, after several months realize, oh, this person's not going to get it done, and have to like scrap that and start over with someone new. And, you know, that's a really expensive lesson. And I took responsibility for that, but it, you know, it's just a tough thing to learn on the job.
You know, but that's a really interesting point that you bring up, though, is that, you know, as an individual web developer, you've been very successful, and you know, you're a good individual worker. When people then go out and start a company, like, I don't know how to do subcontractors and taxes and accounting. Doesn't it mean that you go from working as a web developer for 100% of your time to maybe half of your time you're a web developer, and the rest of the time it's all the administrative business type stuff that we don't have any experience in?
Right. And the administrative stuff is kind of there regardless, but yes, when you take on trying to, you know, outsource tasks to other people, that is a whole other layer of complexity. And if you don't have those processes and documentation in place, then it makes it that much harder.
Mm. Do you use all sorts of, like, what kind of tools do you bring in? Like, was it an issue of, like, I have to use Basecamp for this and use Trello for that and all those kind of things? And then when you talk about process or structure, what do you mean?
So when I talk about process and structure, mostly I'm talking about knowing how things are supposed to happen. So the tool that you use to delineate that doesn't really matter. I've used Trello, I've used Basecamp, I've used Teamwork. But more it's, okay, you know, when it's time to onboard a new client, what needs to happen? Well, it's probably the same set of steps every time. Like, do you know what those steps are? Are they written down where someone else can see them, so that if you had to train somebody else to do it, you know, you would have, you would be able to hand them this list and say, these are the things you need to do. If you don't have that, then every time someone new comes into your business, you're either winging it or you're sort of trying to remember off the top of your head, okay, what happens next? And that's the recipe for disaster.
Yeah.
And overwhelm.
I'm learning that now. I now have a team. I used to have a team like many, many years ago, and then I became an individual contributor, and now I have a team of three, and they're all different kinds of people from all different places in the world, and they're all different time zones. And I'm having to like create structure where there was no structure before. And it's really like emailing them randomly turns out isn't the kind of structure that they need as employees. It's like, I don't know, it works for me.
Yeah. So what I do now is, you know, and it's easier to do this, you know, before you start hiring people, although that's not usually the way it happens. But what I've done is just start to record things as I do them. So just writing down the steps of, okay, when I post a new blog post, what has to happen? And so I have a list of, you know, almost 25 things that have to happen if a new blog post is going to go out. So then I can hand that off to a virtual assistant or, you know, whatever. Or even if I'm, you know, I still do it myself, but then I don't have to remember the steps, or I don't have to worry that I missed something. I just open the checklist and go down it.
It seems like when you go from one to N people, it all becomes about documentation.
Pretty much. Yeah. And I've written some blog posts about documentation. I feel like documentation is a love letter to future you, because you're going to come back to whatever it is, even if it's just you, and go, what is happening here? Especially with websites and technology.
That is really good. I like that. You know, because I've been treating my blog as documentation, and it is a love letter to future me, because I'm always Googling for stuff that I know I did before.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, thank you, past Scott, for writing that down so that future Scott did not have to think about it.
Well, I have to say, too, that I really like that philosophy, and I've adopted it very strongly. And I tell people constantly that if someone asks me a question and I can answer with a link to something that I've already written, I feel like I won. And I read your post about having so many keystrokes, and I was like, yes, that is the way in the light, and I'm going to embrace it.
That's awesome. That makes me happy. Thank you. So walk me through, if you don't mind, the story arc of the year, because it didn't start as a failure on like day one. Like, so things must have multiplied.
Yeah. So, you know, things started out very shiny. I hired someone to do, you know, a lot of the back-end development. I actually handed off all of the stuff. I went on a vacation, which was amazing. And then just as time went by, you know, there were more communication issues with the developer, and it was just a lot harder than it needed to be. And so at some point, you know, there was kind of a critical moment where it's like, okay, what am I going to do if this guy can't get it done? And at that point, I was much further entrenched in the mastermind community that I had joined. And so I had a network of hundreds of people, you know, who are all web professionals of different types. And so I reached out to that community, which is what I should have done in the first place, but I was only a couple of weeks into it. So I reached out to one of them and
briefly, and mastermind community is what?
It's called 10K Bootcamp, and it's actually a course to teach you how to land larger web projects. You know, so if you were doing, you know, $500 websites or $1,000 websites, like how to level up to $10,000 websites. And so I reached out to someone in that community and kind of explained my position. He was like, yeah, we can totally rebuild this. And that process was great. But then there was also the complexity of getting the data from the old system into the new system. And that's kind of where things fell apart. And so, you know, when we tried to launch, it just didn't work. And it was very clear that it wasn't going to work without, you know, further fixing. So at that point, I kind of had to just remove myself from the process and say, look, you know, this person can get you, to the finish line on this, mm-hmm. but I've got to step out. So that was a really hard moment. And, kind of probably like the second worst month of my life when that happened. But even in the middle of it, you know, the great thing about having that community is that I was reaching out to people for help and they were telling me like, oh yeah, let me tell you when this happened to me. And the stories they were telling me were almost always 10 times worse than what was happening in the moment. And I was like, oh, so this isn't like I'm a failure and should never work again. Mm-hmm. This is a thing that happens to everybody who goes into business and tries to, you know, get outside their comfort zone and,
right.
And you get through it. Like things happen in business and you deal with it. And I think that's an attitude that you learn when you have, you know, when you're a freelancer, you have a company, you very quickly learn that things happen and you have to focus almost immediately on, okay, what's the thing that's going to fix the situation and not, oh, I'm a terrible failure. And, you know, yeah, you get a little bit of wallowing, but then you have to pick yourself up and figure out what to do next.
How much of having a business like this is, we're going to say the word insurance, but it's not about, insurance is about covering yourself when things go wrong, right? Because any number of things can go wrong. You say that, you know, you had a subcontractor that didn't work out, but it could have been web hosting that went down, or it could have been getting audited. You know, like there's speed bumps in life and there's potholes that are going to happen regardless. How do you protect yourself from those things?
Well, I mean, you can only protect yourself to a certain extent, right? And part of the process with, you know, failing at things is figuring out like what went wrong and how to keep it from happening again. And so a lot of the things that I'm focused on, like documentation and process and you know, figuring out what kinds of projects I want to work on and what kinds of businesses I can help came from having that terrible year and that terrible failure, because mm-hmm. now I can be like, okay, that's a thing that, you know, I'm not good at and I don't want to do. And it kind of brings into relief, these are the things I am good at. Like, luckily, you know, I did do some other projects for some other people who were really happy with the results. And so I could point to something and say like, oh, okay, I did this thing that was cool and I made this person happy. And it kind of helped me narrow down like, okay, I really prefer to work with service-based businesses. And I really prefer to work with, you know, a certain size of business. And I really like to focus on not just, okay, let's build you a website, but how do we make that website an asset to your business? How do we turn that into, you know, an employee basically that can market for you 24/7, because that's the whole point and great thing about the web is that it's never off. So if you're going to have a website, you might as well turn it into something useful that actually, you know, is an asset for your business. So those are the things I came to focus on sort of out of, you know, doing all the wrong things for a little while.
This episode of Hansel Minutes is brought to you by Braintree, code for easy online payments. If you're building a mobile app and you're searching for a simple payment solution, check out Braintree. The Braintree V.0 SDK makes it easy to offer multiple mobile payment types. So you can start accepting PayPal, Apple Pay, Bitcoin, Venmo, credit cards, and more, all with a single integration. One small snippet of code and you're set up in less than 10 minutes. If you don't have time, you can give them a call. They'll even handle the integration for you and walk you through it. The SDK supports 7 languages: .NET, Node, Java, Perl, PHP, Python, and Ruby. Elegant code, clear documentation. To learn more and for your first $50,000 in transactions fee-free, go to braintreepayments.com/Hanselman. That's braintreepayments.com/Hanselman.
So what do you do? What would you do if you literally backed up in time and started all over again, the exact same everything, except you know what would happen? How would you, like, you know what I mean? Like Groundhog Day.
Yeah. So with this particular job, you mean? I definitely would point the client in another direction. Like, in hindsight, I think that, you know, there should have been, it probably should have gone to an agency. There probably should have been a team of people just from how complex it is. And another thing that one of my friends said to me is that, you know, having, when you have a business that is your entire website, I mean, this was a really complex e-commerce site where the whole business was dependent on that, and you have no one technical in your company, that's probably not a good long-term thing. Like, if you're, you know, like, there was nobody, you know, there were no employees, and like, it was all contractors working on the site. And so I think if you have a website that's just like, oh, I've got a bike shop and I need a website to market it, like, okay, cool. But if your whole business is your website, you probably want somebody, you know, at your beck and call 9 to 5 who understands a lot of that technical stuff and can deal with that on a day-to-day basis.
Well, yeah. I mean, if they do that, they've outsourced literally everything to the point where there's no backup, right? If you get hit by a bus, their business collapses. If there's no technical person to manage that, wow. That's a dramatically bad idea.
Yeah. So lots of lessons. And, you know, I really came out of it with, I mean, there were some ideas that I was working on that I just didn't have time to implement. And so it's been nice coming out of that to really have time to focus on the next thing that I want to do and focus on restructuring my business in a way that's going to be better for me and better for my future clients and my current clients. So that's been really good.
Well, this brings up a really interesting question also, which is the idea that when you are growing, when you're growing as a person, when you're growing as a business, you're always encouraged to step outside your comfort zone. And I've always been told by people that I trust and admire to stretch and do stuff that makes you uncomfortable. But at the same time, you know, I don't go and try to squat 400 pounds because I would die. Right. So right. Like, at what point
yeah.
do you go, hey, I'm stretching outside my comfort zone at a reasonable amount of stretching. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And I've been thinking about that a lot because, you know, a few months ago when I was in the thick of it, it's like, oh yeah, everybody tells you fake it till you make it. And they don't really talk about what happens when you don't make it.
Yeah.
Which is part of the reason I did, you know, a whole talk about failure a couple of weeks ago. Because, you know, we need to talk about that. And yes, you should stretch outside your comfort zone, but what's too much? You know, obviously 400 pound squats too much. This job that I took was too much. You know, maybe in 2 or 3 years, you know, I could take a job like that and it would go off without a hitch. But
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's hard to know that in advance. And that's why we get those life happens moments.
Yeah, it is a bit of a correction, but at the same time, it also takes a lot of emotional maturity, and it takes also organizational maturity to be able to say, you know, this is bigger than I can do.
Yeah. And another thing that I thought a lot about, especially before I gave that talk, is there's a great article on Medium, and I think it's called 7 Lessons for Seven Lessons for Minority Leaders and Everyone Else, but it talks about sort of this amalgam, you know, of a guy that he calls Kevin. And it's like Kevin's sort of like your typical straight white dude in tech or in whatever, where, you know, you can fail and there's really not that much consequence to it. Whereas
from
if you're
a career perspective.
And you know, if you are in an underrepresented group in whatever your career field, there's so much more risk to failure, to talking about failure, because, you know, you really have the risk of that's what people remember. You know, you don't, whereas, you know, when you're talking about people who are in the majority, then it's like, oh yeah, they failed and whatever, they bounce back and like they get the pass, right?
Yeah.
And it's a great article. I'll send it to you for show notes if you want, but it really kind of points out, you know, the risks and the consequences can be so much greater. And that's why, you know, especially if you're underrepresented, it's more of a stressor to be like, oh, I have to be the best and I have to always present success, you know, because the risks are greater.
Yeah, I can relate to that. And I think that, you know, for some people who are listening, that might be hard to hear. But like many, many years ago, I wrote a blog post called I'm a Phony, where I kind of was one of the early people who talked about imposter syndrome. And while it felt risky and it was in a way risky, it wasn't. Ultimately, there's still a whole bunch of people who just laugh it off and they go, oh, Scott, ha ha, you're not a phony. You know, it doesn't stick with me like that, you know. And while some people are like, think, oh, that's so courageous, there's a certain amount of Teflon involved where it hasn't stuck with me in a negative way from a technical perspective. And I use it to empower others, but ultimately it didn't cause me pain. While it could definitely cause someone else a problem if they had decided to become the phony and everyone would just, you know, you Google for phony and you find that person and you go, all right, I will not be hiring you for, you know, for your website.
Exactly.
So then where do you come with it? Where does that courage come from for you to go and basically do the opposite? And rather than simply, you know, curling up and saying, all right, this was a failure, I'm not going to talk about it and I will start over next year. You have gone and done an actual talk on failure at conferences.
Well, it was a meetup. It wasn't a conference, although I do have someone that I'm talking with about a conference and like, oh, maybe that talk. I'm like, oh man.
Well, but you keynoted open source. I mean, to give yourself some credit, you keynoted Open Source Bridge on a different topic last year. So
yeah.
I could see this being a keynote.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I'll think about it. But really why I decided to do it was one, it was, I had agreed to give the talk, you know, probably 6 months before. It was supposed to happen in September. And at that time I was probably planning to talk about the new project that I'm working on right now, Websites at Work. And then I was going to be out of town. So then we postponed. And when the new date came up, it was like, well, this is really probably the most useful thing that I have to talk about because people are out there struggling with this kind of thing. And yeah, I can talk about my new project and try to sell people on my new project. But for that kind of talk, it was like, what's going to be the most useful for the audience? And so that's why I decided to talk about it. And also, you know, I make websites, like I work on the internet. So even if a certain percentage of people are like, oh, okay, I'm never going to hire her again, or, you know, I'm going to steer clear. It's like, it's a big world and a big internet. So I don't feel like I'm not going to be able to create a business or recover. You know, if there's always a few people who aren't going to hire you. There's always millions of people who aren't going to hire you for whatever reason, but there's, you know, millions more people. So although it's maybe a higher risk for me than for some other people, I also feel like it's probably worth it and it helps other people, especially other people who are really afraid to speak up and admit to anybody that they're struggling. It can be really hard when you're in that position to just see success, success, success and think, well, everybody else is doing this. That means like I'm not cut out for it or I shouldn't be doing it. And that's not the case.
Right. I think it's so important also to think about what are appropriate comparisons and when comparison is empowering versus when comparison just makes things worse.
Exactly. I have a friend who has a whole program around learning to stop comparing yourself to other people.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm on my timeline, and it seems like everyone is visiting the White House for some amazing thing.
Yes.
Like, and I'm in Portland just hanging out at Chipotle, you know, and like, I'm not the White House, like I suck, you know, and it just begins.
Well, and I am actually friends with someone who's been to the White House twice in the last 2 years. And I'm like, man, I'm so close, but so far I'm like, I am not doing what she's doing. And yeah, so it can be crippling to kind of dwell on that too much instead of mm-hmm. like, okay, what is the next thing that I can do? You know, what's the way that I can start helping people and not like, oh, you know, I'm going to worry that Dean is at the White House and I'm not.
Right. And then from a technical perspective, I think it's important to remember that there's a whole bunch of technologies out there, a lot. And, you know, I am never going to be a Python expert, or I'm never going to be a WordPress theming expert, and then pause for effect, and that's okay. You know, that's right. The part that's so challenging is the, and that's okay.
Right. Exactly. And yeah, there are a lot of technologies and it's super overwhelming. And that's kind of what the motivation was for my next project, which is one thing I learned from all this is that one of the things I really enjoy is teaching people and empowering people around technology. Mm-hmm. And so I created, you know, an entire course around that because I see this same pattern where, you know, clients come to me and I say, okay, let's get started. You know, where's your site hosted? And, you know, where's your domain hosted? And they literally say to me, oh, I don't know. Or, you know, my previous developer handled all that stuff. Like it's in their name. And I'm like, wait, you don't own it. It's your business, you know? And for the first couple of years, it'd be like, almost half the people would come to me and the first thing we'd have to do is be like, well, we have to take back your stuff so that it's yours before I can actually help you. And like, that's the level of, you know, lack of education, I guess, around technology when that's not your primary business. And so I created a course for small business owners to help them learn how to get websites that are effective and also just what you need to know. You know, you don't have to be the one to go in and like change DNS on your domain name, but mm-hmm. you have to own it because it's your business. Yeah. It's kind of like if you bought a house or you bought, you know, you had a physical brick and mortar business and you go mm-hmm. to sign the lease and you let your real estate agent sign it.
Oh, yeah.
When I explain it to people like that, the light bulb goes on. I'm like, yeah, oh, I'm like, they're there to facilitate the transaction. But it's still your responsibility and your name has to be on it.
It's such a huge problem for small business owners. I had a friend who had a towing business and didn't realize that the person who did their website also owned the domain registration.
Exactly.
And they were like, how could they know, right? No one's going to teach them.
Exactly.
Yeah. And there's so many brochureware sites that are made and even something like, you know, change the title. Like, again, mm-hmm. you know, you don't need to teach them HTML, but if there was something, whether it be Squarespace or WordPress, that would allow them to go and, you know, update a picture, you know, to really empower the small business owner to not feel like it's $100 change fee every time they want to do something small.
Exactly. And I always, with my clients, you know, try to give them as much control as they want, right? If they want to pay to have me do every little thing, like, that's totally fine. I'll do it. But if they want to be like, hey, I don't want to call you, like, every other day, teach me how to, you know, manage pages or create blog posts or change photos or whatever, then A, I want to build it in such a way that it's easy for them to do that. And B, I want to teach them how to do that and provide the resources so that they can be as independent and as empowered as they want to be.
Mm-hmm. And you've made a course. Where is this course going to happen?
So it's not created yet. I ran a beta in the fall. So from November to January, I did 6 different webinars with a small beta test group where I just went through the different topics. So each mm-hmm. week is a different topic or foundation where we talk about things like owning your domain name and, you know, talk about discovery and actually figuring out, you know, what is your actual message? Like, what's your goal? What are you trying to say? A lot of people go into a website with like, okay, we need a design. It's like, well, what's your content going to be? So we talk about things like that, talk about marketing and content, and then, you know, the technology piece of how do you actually create this thing? you know, how do you launch it? How do you market it? All that kind of stuff. So we went through that with a beta course where I just did live webinars and answered people's questions. And now I'm doing a fundraising round, a crowdfund on Indiegogo, to go ahead and create the first version of the course. So it'll be hosted online. It'll be recorded, you know, short lessons, and there'll be a coaching call each week with me, or, you know, kind of help people with the concepts or the things that they're struggling with, and more detailed tutorials on like, how actually do you do this tech thing? Like step-by-step walkthroughs of how to do things, because, you know, things have evolved so much. It's like any manufacturing process, right? When you started with websites, it was like HTML and CSS, or, you know, GeoCities or what have you. And now it's like you can spin up a WordPress site. And I actually literally sat down with my cousin last weekend, and we put up a WordPress.com site for her, you know, where all the structure was in place and she just needs to fill it in. And we did that in 4 hours. So manufacturing with websites has reached a point where you can create something that looks professional and nice, but you still need to know what should you create and how do you actually reach people with it. And so that's what I'm trying to teach people.
So how did they, I'm just curious how that person felt when you put that together.
Well, she actually was one of my people who went through my beta course, because it was a beta and it was, you know, very sort of generalized overview. I didn't do a lot of like specific tech walkthroughs. So she was someone who, you know, never touched WordPress. She's an amazing artist, does beautiful paintings, never really touched WordPress or technology. And so for her, it was very overwhelming even to go on WordPress.com and create an account and try to figure out. So we just sat down and said, okay, you know, we know you want to showcase your art, so let's find a good theme for that. I showed her how to, you know, buy her domain name, how to point it at her new site so that it says, you know, her domain name and not her domain.wordpress.com. And as I walked her through those things, she could see, like, we're really just filling in forms, right? You know, even changing the DNS for the domain, it was like, once I walked her through, it's like, well, you're really just copying this thing here and you're pasting it over here in your domain registrar in the right place. Right. It's not something technical. It's like, if you can follow directions, and just go step by step, it's something that you can do without being technical, without having to code. But having no context or experience or background, she needed that step by step walkthrough. And so, you know, she was thrilled, and now she has something where really she just needs to learn how to add her images and go in and add the text and all that kind of stuff, which is, I think, more accessible to most people.
That's very cool. Well, I'm glad that your new project is, it sounds like it's off to a good start.
Yeah, we're 26% funded at this point, and the fundraiser goes until April 20th. So, and then if things go really well and we go over, then for every $500 over the goal, which is $12,000, I'm going to give away a scholarship to a small business owner to join the course.
Very cool. So people can check you out at twitter.com/KRONDA, and your website is Carvel, KARVEL, digital.com.
Correct.
All right. Well, thanks so much.
Or as I like to say, you can just Google my first name and find out anything you want to know about me.
Yeah. All right. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to talk with me today.
Thanks for having me on.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.